Okay. I go to once a month, or just about once a month, to Victor Street and preach. I'm kind of on their rotation. And when I started there, Zane was there, and he, I decided, because I had Zane as a professor in seminary, and he's a really tough grader, that's what I found out the hard way, I better stay in the Old Testament. That was my major in seminary. You have to have a screw loose to major in Hebrew and Old Testament. I mean, right, Steve?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for that.
Bruce Walkie
was one of my professors. I have stories about Bruce Walkie. One of them that really hurt me, and not just me, is he would say, gentlemen, here's a list of things that are going to be on the final exam. And you get to the final exam, not one of them is on the final exam. And it wasn't because he was mean. He was so forgetful. And there, I could tell you other stories about Dr. Walkie. But just brilliant, brilliant guy. You know, and I love talking to him. You know, don't agree with all of his views for sure, but I really, really appreciate and admire and read everything Dr. Walkie has. I had Alan Ross. I was there during the what they call the golden age of 74 to 78. I am that old. And but I had all the good ones, Ross, you know, and the guy that read my thesis was Don Glenn. You know, he was on the committee. He was on the committee to do the first NIV translation. And remember being in class with Dr. Glenn, or Prof. Glenn, and we were in Daniel chapter 9, you know, the 70 weeks passage, and we got a preview copy of the Daniel 9 passage of the NIV. And he goes, "See that footnote? That's my footnote." But, you know, and he was just, I just had all the greats. And I feel incredibly humbled that I was able to study with these guys that were giants, you know, not to mention Howard Hendricks and the, you know, Charles Ryrie and all these other big names. I got to study with all those guys. I mean, I was a, you know, little old me. but it was a privilege and an honor to study with them. And one of the things that I did at Victor Street was I figured because Zane was there, I better stay in the Old Testament. And because I didn't want to hear about, you know, how really bad my New Testament presentations were going to be. So I stayed in the Old Testament. And one of the books that I went through at Victor Street was the Book of Judges. Because who preaches from the Book of Judges? Only nuts like me. You know? But what is so amazing is, yes, it's a very depressing book because you see this over and over cycle of, you know, complete falling away from the Lord to the rising up of a judge, which is probably better translated warlord. And then when the warlord dies, he gets the victory and they all come back to faith. And then after he dies, plop. And it's this endless cycle. And one of the passages that I saw was this Judges 17 and 18. So what I'm going to do, let's open in a word of prayer, and then we'll just kind of go. I'll give you a little survey of Judges, quick survey, and then we'll get into the text of these two chapters. Lord, thank you for our time together and that we can worship you, learn more about you, and pray that as we learn more about how you work, that our faith is increased. Bless our time together in Christ's name, amen. Okay, here we go. Overview of the book of Judges. Okay. It covers, believe it or not, the book of Judges covers about 300 years of Israel's history. Essentially from 1390 B.C. to around 1090 B.C. Now, remember, Saul was around 1050, you know, so this is right before the reign of Saul. This 1090 is during Samuel's time, okay? So in those, you know, in the book of Judges, it covers an awful lot of history, doesn't it? And it's a dark history. It's a very bad time in Israel's history. Death of Joshua to the reign of Samson, essentially, or, you know, you could actually say, if you wanted to, when Saul was crowned or anointed king, you could say it that way. So the author, who knows? Who knows? There are theories that, you know, Moses wrote the first five books, what we call the Pentateuch, and then there's another author that wrote Joshua, Judges, Ruth, and the Kings, Chronicles, all that stuff, called the Deuteronomical Historian. And a lot of guys think that there was a writer that put all those things together at some point. Okay, and so we don't know who the author is. That's why I kept that blank. Who knows? Possibly Samuel, but like I say, who knows? Let's take a look at the outline. Conquest and failure. What you see here is in chapter 1, you have the death of Joshua. And then you have, oh, let's go out. We can still do this. We can still conquer the land. They were supposed to go out and conquer the land. That's what they were, you know, and the Lord said, all you have to do, and I'm going to emphasize this more and more, all you have to do is obey me, and I'll give you the victory. Guess what happened? The Israelites didn't follow up on their end of the bargain, and therefore the Lord tried to use discipline to keep them from doing that. So he had to raise up judges. It went to absolute chaos. And that's the bulk of the book of Judges, okay, is that cycle. You know, Samson's part of that cycle. Deborah was a judge and so on, okay? And so we have this, like I say, this endless cycle we call it periods of apostasy. They fell away from the faith. Actually, and I'll repeat this over and over again, not because I'm old. To me, based on my studies of the Old Testament, the number one problem that the Israelites had was not falling away from the worship of Yahweh, their God. It was blending the worship of Yahweh with a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, it would be like somebody today says, yeah, I'm a Bible-believing Christian, but I really like Buddhism. So I'm going to try to blend the two. Okay, and you hear, sometimes you do hear that, you know, and I think I can prove that a lot of Roman Catholicism has been doing that for centuries. I'll give you a short example, an aside here, I'll throw this in for free. When I had S. Lewis Johnson for the book of Revelation, and one day he said, the worship of Mary, I don't know how we got on the topic of Roman Catholicism, but we did during class. And he said that the worship of Mary in the Catholic Church, you can trace back to a Babylonian cult that worships women. You know, and when I was in Greece, I talked to the guy at the time that it was a part of the Greek Bible Institute. He said, you know how the Catholics evangelized? They said, you don't have to, you don't have to change anything. You know, instead of calling this goddess, this pagan goddess that you worship, just call her Mary. But you don't have to change what you believe. And that's how they evangelized back then. And that's why the importing of cultural stuff into the pure faith in the Bible is the biggest danger to all people, all of God's covenant people, both Old Covenant and New Covenant. We have that same problem, don't we? And I'm going to repeat that a lot, too. But there were six periods of apostasy. Believe it or not, there's three appendices to the book of Judges. One of them is the hippie Levite that we're going to talk about. And then there's the violent Levite, which is the latter chapters of the book of Judges. And believe it or not, Ruth, by a lot of scholars, is also an appendix to the book of Judges. Okay? The fact that they are appendices doesn't mean that what we're going to talk about in chapter 17 and 18 happened after chapter 16. You know, it doesn't mean that the hippie Levite showed up on the scene after Samson. Okay? In fact, I think I'm going to prove it during our time together. Okay? So that's the way to look at this. They all have, and I don't have it up here, but they all have one thing in common, all these appendices. One word, Bethlehem. The main, at least one of the main players in all these three appendices is tied to Bethlehem. Okay? And you're going to see that in our little talk today as well. Okay, how about the hippie Levite? I love it. I grew up in the hippie. I was in high school during the hippie era. It was far out, man. Let's talk about the main characters. We're going to talk about Micah and Mom. We're going to talk about the hippie Levite. And see, chapter 17 of our passage, these are the two main players. Okay, Micah and the hippie Levite. And so chapter 17 is the introduction of our stars to this drama. Okay? And then chapter 18 is the Danite drama. The Danite, the tribe of Dan shows up. Okay? They search for a new territory. They steal from Micah, which is part of the interesting passage here. And then the Danites conquer, kill, and settle in a new place. There's a lot going on here. Okay? But it's just interesting that chapter 17 is, let me introduce you to these players, okay? And then the Danites show up as well. They show up in, the first part of chapter 18. Let's go through Micah and Mom. Now, at this point, what I would normally do is I would say, if you hear something that sounds, I was going to say hinky, weird, this would be audience participation. You could go, eh. But with this group, we ought to just do ding. Okay. Let's take a look at Micah and Mom. Look at, if you're in Judges 17, notice it says, there was a man from the mountains of Ephraim whose name was Micah. Micah is a shortened name for Micaiahu, which means who is like God. Or who is like Yahweh? It says, what's the implied answer? Nobody. He is incomparable. In fact, I have a book, one of my favorite books, called The Incomparability of Yahweh in the Old Testament, written by a really good scholar. And it's great because that's what Micah means. Who is like, he's incomparable. There's nothing. You know, the book of Micah, the prophet, same thing, Micaiahu. You know, it's a shortened form of it. Now, keep that in mind. His name is, who is like the Lord? Verse 2, the drama begins. And he said to his mother, the 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from you, on which you put a curse, even saying into my ears, here's the silver for me, I took it. Here's the problem. Micah stole the silver from his mom. Now, 1,100 shekels is a fortune. Talk about, your lifetime savings. Okay? And here's Micah, who is like God, stealing from his own mom. He steals her entire fortune. Okay? It'd be like somebody stealing all of our retirement money. Okay? For us old geezers. Okay? But I'm on the only old geezer, right? Well, I'm the only geezer. Yeah. Were you about to go ant on this? Yeah, I would too. Here's a guy named who is like the Lord, the holy God, stealing from his own mom. It's essentially impoverishing her. And then, not only that, he returns all 1,100 shekels because he's afraid of her curse. So now, not only is he a thief, he's a superstitious thief. If mom curses me, I'm in serious trouble. Ain't nothing worse than a mom's curse, right? Hey, that even rhymes. I like that. Yeah. Yeah. And notice how mom reacts, last part of verse 2. May you be blessed by the Lord, my son. Glad to get it back. Thank you so much. Okay? Now, let's see if Mom has. We know that Micah has some serious moral problems. The last name he should have is who is like the Lord. You know. Look at verse 3. So when he had returned the 1,100 shekels of silver, his mother said, I wholly dedicated the silver of my hand to the Lord for my son. And she uses the name Yahweh. Keep that in mind. To make a carved image and a molded image. Do I hear a eh? See, one of the things, remember, Exodus 20, verse 4 says what? You shall make no, what?
Carved image
or molded image. This is a direct violation. Oh, what they're doing, you know what they're doing here, which is scary? They are trying to make a molded image of Yahweh himself. This is not some other God. Okay? And see, when the Lord said, you shall not make any carved image, he included himself in that. Sure, you're going to make, you know, people make carved images out of all the gods and goddesses of the ancient Near East, put them on their mantle at home and go, oh, great God of good, you know, and pray to it. Don't do that, because Yahweh is the invisible God. Okay? Who knows? Well, who knows about any of the images? You know?
Moses' brother, who said, I just put the gold in and it came out. It didn't work good.
This is one of these passages, like that one, Exodus 32. I try to imagine the conversation, okay? And we'll get to that. I try to imagine the conversation between Micah and the Levite, the hippie Levite. Okay, Micah returns his money on account of fear. Mom makes idols with the returned silver. What do you think? Are we having fun yet? Okay.
So she actually did make it then?
She did make it, but look at verse 4. This is interesting. He returned the money, all 1,100 shekels, and she took 200 shekels of silver. I thought she dedicated all 1,100. Do I hear an ant? You know, so she takes the 200 shekels to the silversmith and says, here, make this carved image and all that. Okay, and they were in the house of Micah. Okay, just a thought here. Do you think Micah and his mom were somewhat materialistic? Could we use that term? Yeah. My whole life savings I give to the Lord. Here's a penny. You know, I mean, that's kind of what's going on. Meaning, I really don't mean that 1,100 goes to the Lord. I'll give him 200. Done. I thought 10%. Well, I'm doing 20. You know, I'm generous. Not if she committed it, all of it, to the Lord. Okay? Notice then, verse 5, the man Micah had a shrine. Literally, in the Hebrew, it's house of gods. That's what the Hebrew says. And he made an ephod, probably for some kind of divination. Yeah, there was an ephod that the priest, the true priest of the Lord, would wear. But other people would say, we're going to make our own ephod, and we're going to use that as, you know, if I wear it a certain way and the wind's from the certain such and such direction, I got what I want. You see, in other words, they're going to use it for superstition. Okay? And so he makes the ephod and the household idols, and he consecrated one of his sons to become the priest. This guy's not a Levite. Who's the only person that can become a priest in Israel? A Levite. This guy's not a Levite. He's from Ephraim. Are we having trouble here, fam? Is this a family that you would not want to be a part of? How about the word dysfunctional comes to mind?
It's practical. They're just making it happen.
They are. And look at verse 16, or verse 6, I mean. In those days there was no king. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And that's a quote of Deuteronomy 12:8. And it's also the last verse in the book of Judges. as well. The problem here is, and that phrase, everyone did what was right in his own eyes, is a direct violation of the book of Deuteronomy. I just got through writing stuff on Deuteronomy 17. And in Deuteronomy 17, it says, if you observe somebody doing something like idolatry somewhere in your community, you go to the judge, the local judge. And if it's too complicated for you, you go to the judges that are where the Lord dwells. And so they had that as a legal system. Okay? Is anybody taking Micah and his mom to court here? No. That means society has already fallen to such a point that they allow this. Do you understand?
It's part of the economic system with the silver spending.
Could be too. Yeah. Yeah. But it's fascinating how badly not only Micah and his mom have fallen away from the faith, but the entire society, because they're not being reported to the authorities like Deuteronomy, like the Lord told them to do. Purity of faith and purity of practice of that faith was paramount in the book of Deuteronomy. Okay? It's just amazing. It's just amazing. Well, that's Micah and his mom. What do you think? Are we having fun now? Verse 7, he changes. Here's the hippie Levite. Now there was a young man from where?
Bethlehem.
Okay? Oh, by the way, I was going to show you some of this stuff here. There's the hill country, and here's Bethlehem. That's the Dead Sea, and that's the Sea of Galilee up there. And later on in our story, see where Laish is? Well, the Danites are over here. And they're going to explore this country to see where they can resettle. And then they end up in Laish, long way away. Okay? So the hippie Levite is from Bethlehem. He was of the family of Judah. He was a Levite. So if you're part of the Levite, you're part of the priestly tribe. And, you know, like what I heard, for a while I was confused as to who's a priest and who's not. And I finally read something from one of my professors that said, every priest is a Levite, but not every Levite is a priest. Okay? Because if you study Exodus and you study the book of Numbers, if you were of the tribe or the family line of Aaron, who was a Levite, you were a priest. But if you were not descended from Aaron, you were simply a Levite, not a priest. And each family, if you read through this carefully in Exodus, especially Exodus and some other places, the other family units were given tasks to support the tabernacle and support what the priests had to do. They were totally dedicated to the tabernacle and the worship of the Lord, but they were not priests. You know, like I told people, I said, there's some of these families, okay, you get to carry this 2x4. Oh, by the way, you have to carry it all the way to Canaan from Egypt. How would you like to? This is what the Lord wants me to do for my whole life. I get to carry this piece of wood from Egypt to Canaan. Folks, the Lord would reward that because you're doing what he wants you to do.
How could he be from Judah and be a Levite? Geographic, not Bible.
Well, see, the Levites were not given a land.
I know, so it's from the territory, not from the tribe.
Well, no, he would, right, yeah, and right. And that's some of the problem here. Notice that this hippie Levite is not named here. Then he goes, verse 8, the man departed from the city of Bethlehem in Judah to stay wherever he could find a place. This is where the hippie comes in. Levites could travel from when their home was the Levitical cities. Certain cities were allocated in all the tribal territories where the Levites could live. But they could travel. You know, if they needed to do something that's associated with worship or something, they could travel. But what they could not do is just walk around, wandering around. This is why I got the hippie idea, because it reminded me of the hippies that would flock to San Francisco. You know, the Haight-Ashbury stuff, you know. And it's just like, I'm just wandering around, man, trying to find out what's going on. Remember? We heard all that on the TV. I'm just wandering around, man. And that's why that jumped into my mind with this Levite. The one thing he's not supposed to do is wander around aimlessly. He's in service to the Lord. 100% his entire life, he is to serve the Lord. Not just wandering around seeing what life has for me, man. That's not right. Okay? And so, notice in verse 9, he encounters Micah. Now, this is where the conversation. I look at Micah now as a businessman. And so you have a businessman talking to a hippie. Can you imagine the conversation here? Notice he says, Micah, verse 9, where do you come from? I'm a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, and I'm on my way to find a place to stay, man. Micah, being the businessman, says, look at what he says. I love it. Dwell with me, be a father and priest to me, and I will give you 10 shekels of silver per year, a suit of clothes, and your sustenance. Now, let me translate that into the business world. Young man, I could use your skills as a Levite, and I'm willing to give you a decent salary, a clothing allowance, and room and board. Isn't that what he's doing here in verse 10? Yeah.
The Navy does the same thing.
Oh, that's true.
Another story. Well, also him saying, and be a father.
Well, that's another thing. Well, being a father means an authority figure, and since he was a Levite, we're talking about spiritual authority, spiritual counselor, if you will. Okay.
Oh,
the mere fact that he was a Levite gave him all the credentials he needed. And so what did the Levite say back? Far out, man. Groovy. This is cool. So the Levite went in. Then the Levite was content to dwell with the man, and the young man became like one of his sons. Obviously, the answer is yes. So Micah consecrated the Levite, still not named. Notice the young man became the priest and lived in the house of Levi. Then Micah said, I know that the Lord will be good to me since I have a Levite. Doesn't that sound superstitious? The Lord's going to bless me because I got me a Levite in my little shrine. Oh, by the way, were people allowed to have their own shrines?
No.
I didn't hear a
Well, how could Micah consecrate him, and what does that mean?
That's the whole in other words, ordain him for the ministry in his own shrine. See, over and over again, especially in the book of Deuteronomy, people were supposed to worship where the Lord chose to be worshipped. It's not like you can roll your own shrine. You see what I mean? I love this. How many commandments have been broken in this one little chapter? Stealing, making idols, making a shrine, making his son a priest, which was not a Levite. Isn't that wild? Chapter 17 talks about something that I'm going to say pretty often. Once again, syncretism. Okay? He brought in stuff from he grew up in Israel, but Israel was spiritually a disaster area, and he was a product of that, and he brought in the bad stuff from his culture into his faith. All right, let's go to chapter 18. In these days, I'm sorry, I'm not staying up with this, am I? He's just wandering around, Micah offers, and the hippie Levite accepts the job. I mean, does it get any better? Mike is a happy camper. Because now he thinks, I'm obeying all the rules. Well, dream on, bozo. So here's the syncretism, the moral relativism, that's what we would call it, right? In other words, instead of following the law of the Lord, what are they doing? Like you said, they're making it up as they go along. Christians don't do that nowadays, do they? Extreme materialism, did you see that? Let's take a look at Danite. The Danite drama, in the verses 1 through 6, let me summarize this. Verse 2 says that Dan sent five men. The tribe of Dan sent five spies, if you will. You know, kind of like the spies back earlier. And so, but see, the Danites, could not or would not conquer their own land. They were assigned a certain area. Like on that map, it was closer to the Mediterranean Sea, between the Dead Sea and the Mediterranean. And either they couldn't or wouldn't conquer it. And so they say, oh, this is nuts. Let's find a place that we can take over easier. Okay? So the Danites really are doing a great job too, aren't they? So notice it says they searched the land, verse 3, while they were at the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young Levite. Notice he's still not named. Who brought you here and what are you doing? And he said to them, he told the whole story of how he got to Micah's little shrine. Okay? And look at what they do. They're just as superstitious. Look at verse 5. Let's see if I can get this. Verse 5 says, please inquire of God, not Yahweh. In my studies, the use of the words for God are important. In the beginning, Elohim created everything. But when he created man and woman, it's Yahweh. Okay? Yahweh is the name of God in relation to man. Elohim is the name of I'm the creator and you're not. Okay? And I think the use of names is very significant. Some people disagree with me, but I really think so. Here's the thing. They ask, verse 5, please inquire of God that they may know whether the journey will be prosperous. So the priest said to them,
what term for God did they use?
It ain't Yahweh. It's Elohim.
Oh, they use Elohim?
Please inquire of Elohim, not Yahweh.
Oh, okay.
Okay? And then the priest said, go in peace. The presence of Yahweh, verse 6, will be with you on your way. So here's a non-priest going in to ask Yahweh about the Danite, whether they're going to be victorious or not. Is there a problem there? Just a scooch, as we say here in Texas. Then they searched, verses 7 through 10, that they departed and went to Laish. Remember where that was? North of the Sea of Galilee. It would be now in probably southern Syria or southern Lebanon. Yeah, somewhere around there. And notice that the Sidonians lived there. Remember Tyre and Sidon, Sidonians. These were Phoenician people that lived there. They were quite secure. There were no rulers. There were no walls over the cities. They lived securely. Nobody was bugging them. Okay? Meaning, with no walls or anything, easy to conquer for the Danites. Spies came back, verse 8. They said, arise, let us go against them. And so verse 11, how did the Danite leadership respond? Let's go. We're going to send 600 people and armed with weapons of war. Okay? Oh, by the way, I've got a note here which I think is interesting. Ezekiel 38:10-11, the Lord, Yahweh, condemns attacks on innocent people. Guess what the Danites are about to do? In fact, in the law, if you're going to conquer a people that were peaceful, you essentially went into negotiations, but not war, not battle. Okay? And I have Deuteronomy 20:10-15 says the same thing. Okay, so they went, look at verse 12 of 18. They went up and encamped at Kiriath Jearim, and they passed by, the verse 13, the house of Micah. So here's 600 armed men coming to Micah's house. Oh boy, we're having some fun now, aren't we? Okay, they passed by Micah's house on the way. The five men who had gone to spy out the country of Laish, the original five spies, said to their brethren, look at this, do you know that there are in these houses an ephod, which was a valuable piece, household idols, a carved image, and a molded image, implying that they were made of, you know, precious metals, like silver. Okay? Now, therefore, consider what you should do. Guess what they decided to do? Let's grab it. Take it with us. Okay? And that's what happens. Verse 16 and 17. 17, they took the carved image, the ephod, the household idols, and so on. The priest stood at the entrance of the gate with the 600 men. In other words, he just watched. What a cool guy, huh? I just love that. Okay. And then notice when these went out into Micah's house, they took the carved. And then the priest said to them, what are you doing? And they said essentially in verse 19, shut up and just watch. Okay. But notice what they did here. They said, hand over your mouth. Be a father and priest to us. See that in verse 19? Oh, he's got a new job offer. Is it better for you to be a priest of a household of one man or a priest of a tribe of the family of Israel? Well, let's see. I would consider that a promotion. Wouldn't you? Okay. So with verse 20, how did our hippie Levite respond to this new job offer? Far out, man. That sounds groovy. I get a new pad and I get, probably new clothes and everything. Man, it's just wonderful. Oh, far out. So the hippie Levite goes and they turn and depart. They go up and then starting in verse 22, Micah finds out he's been robbed. Let me summarize this. Micah gets all the people he can get and tries to confront these guys, these 600 armed men. We'll call them, Navy SEALs because they were chosen, and or Green Berets, whatever you want. And so, do you think the people that Micah had could conquer, defeat the 600 Green Beret SEALs and all that, and get his stuff back? All they did was turn around and look and say, "Go back home." And guess what Micah did? Okay. That's essentially what this passage is talking about. Then it says in verse 27, they took the things Micah had made and they went up to Laish. And notice what they did. They struck them with the sword and burned the city with fire. Okay. These were cruel, heartless people, the Danites. There was no deliverer, verse 28. Isn't that sad? They changed the name of the city from Laish to Dan. Verse 29, the children of Dan set up for themselves the carved image, and oh, look in verse 30, we get the name of the hippie Levite, Jonathan. Notice it says the son of Gershom. Folks, you know what this means? This means that Jonathan is Moses' grandson. Okay? Moses' grandson. This is great literature, isn't it? You don't the identity of the main player is not known. It's kind of like a crime drama. You don't know the guy who did it till the very end. Yeah, exactly. Folks, the main spiritual problem here was Israelites not abandoning Yahweh. It was blending in other beliefs into their belief of Yahweh. They mixed and merged. Folks, that's happening now. And this is a sad commentary, but unfortunately, us humans are prone to doing this. That sounds good out there in the culture. Let's put some Christian words to it. Make it a Christian thing. It's been going on for centuries. And what I'm learning more and more is we need to we need to learn to have the pure faith. Pure faith. And where do we learn about our pure faith? The Bible itself. That's why passages, obscure passages like this, teach us things. Okay? We're all in danger of this. All of us. There's not one of us here in this conference that is not vulnerable to, oh, that's a great idea. Let's bring that in. Okay? Danites, that's another thing. The Danites were unsatisfied with what God gave them. See? We're going to do our own thing. And that's what they did. They searched without the Lord's leading. And Micah, see how horrible this stuff is? Tyre and Sidon, the Sidonians, it was isolated. This is just awful stuff. They steal, they kill, they burn, they destroy. Folks, this is not fun stuff, okay? So, I guess that's all I got. Notice it's upwardly mobile apostate. I love that. And that's what the hippie Levite was. How long do you think it took him to decide, I'm going with you, Danites? How about 2 seconds? So his loyalty to Micah didn't mean a thing, did it? purely materialistic, purely in it for himself. And folks, let's not let our faith get us there. We are fallible human beings, and all of us can do that. So let's not do that. Are questions or anything, or are we totally done?
So he went from a country church to Crystal Cathedral.
Well, the other problem, let me make one more point. This worship that the hippie Levites set up in Dan plagued the 10 northern tribes for the next 600 years and did not end until the 10 northern tribes were completely destroyed in 722 BC by the Assyrians. It plagued them for 700. This little bitty out-of-the-way incident plagued them for 700 years. Even the most silliest, what we think of as a silly decision, can have huge, long-lasting effects. Isn't that amazing? Okay, but we better pray. I'll get in trouble. Lord, thank you for our time together, and may we learn more of what it is to purely worship you and you alone, and keep us from these influences that would tear us apart and pollute the faith that we have that is presented in your word. Be with us now as we go to other presentations. In Christ's name, amen.
Thank you, David.